Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Tonight was a victory for the voices of our party, conservatives and Tea Party people, who are out there every single day in the vineyards building the conservative movement in this country, building the base of the Republican Party, and building a voice for freedom in this land. Thank you.
All right. Well, it's a small victory, but a very significant one in the sense that he did mention the dirty words tea and party together, while Romney takes out his... white linen napkin whenever he has to be around conservatives and puts it over his nose as he enters the room with the conservatives. Rick Santorum walks and talks the talk while Romney is detached from it. The fact of the matter is the American people tell religious believers to go to hell, and the people are finally awakening to what Obama and Sebelius are doing. Health and Human Services are saying to religious people, go to hell. Obama is telling the military, go to hell. Obama is telling you, you'll do it his way or you'll do it by the highway. In other words, everything that this country has ever stood for, this man stands against. How many of these candidates have articulated that? How many? Well, Santorum has, and he's beat Romney now in these little, really, they're not primaries. We know what they are. The question is, why did Santorum beat Romney? The second question to you on the Savage Nation is, who would stand a better chance of beating Obama, Romney or Santorum? You know, as I ask that question of you and invite you to call 1-800-449-8255, I have to ask myself what I think. For a long while, I felt that although Romney was a liberal Republican, he could beat Obama, maybe. I'm not so sure anymore. I don't think he has the fire in the belly, nor the hunger. The hunger. Santorum has the hunger. And the reason is that Santorum comes from an immigrant family. Romney does not. Santorum has had to fight his way up. Romney has not. Santorum is a younger man than Romney, and in that sense, it's young man versus young man. He might actually go to the mats better than Romney. The fact of the matter is, if either of these men won the primaries and was the Republican candidate, I would back them 100% as opposed to the Leninist in the White House. So I open it up to you. Why did Santorum beat Romney? Who would stand a better chance of beating Obama, Romney, or Santorum? Phone number 1-800-449-8255. And I have a very proud announcement to make to you. It's 2 months earlier than I expected. But on my website, michaelsavage.com, take a look. What do you think of the cover? Trickle Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. I'm not supposed to talk about it 2 months before the data comes out April 3rd. But, you know, things are breaking in this country so rapidly under this president. I've never seen anything like what Obama's been doing. He's told the American people to go to hell. He's told religious believers, go to hell. He's told the military, go to hell. He has done one thing after another that is clearly showing all of us that he wants to create the socialist states of America under one man rule. Will President Obama succeed in his plans to transform his word, transform the greatest engine of freedom the world has ever seen into a top-down, heavy-handed authoritarian regime, if not an outright dictatorship? Or will the American people succeed in exposing and ridding themselves of this new Leninist? I ask the question. I discuss it in Trickle Down Tyranny. Coming soon, the new bestseller for Michael Savage. Savage says founders envisioned a petty dictator like Obama. It was a man like him that they feared would come to possess the presidency. Why do you think they made it so difficult to boss Congress around? He had the nerve to go on NBC and talk to the subterranean Matt Lauer, and had the nerve to say to the subterranean servile flatterer, Matt Lauer, that he finds it very difficult to force, his words, to force Congress to do what he wants. To force Congress to do what he wants. Well, that's the way the country was set up. 1-800-449-8255. Why did Santorum win? Why did he beat Romney? Who would stand a better chance of beating Obama, Romney or sanctimonious Santorum? Would Romney or sanctimonious Santorum beat Obama? Now, we're going to go in now to the culture wars, because the reason Santorum won in these marginal campaigns, and they're very marginal, they don't even have any delegates attached to them, is because of the culture wars. The religious conservatives love Rick Santorum, and rightly so. We're all focused on the fiscally conservative Mitt Romney. At least we hope he's fiscally conservative. We know the Tea Party is fiscally conservative, and we know that the 2010 election showed the power of the Tea Party, which is why the Congressional Black Caucus, Nancy Pelosi, and the union thugs attacked the Tea Party and said, we're going to take them out. They fired the shots against the American people. They said, the American people be damned. We're the real power in this country. We, the minorities in Congress, we, the union thugs, we are the real power. The people can drop dead. And people are worried about a government of the unions, by the unions, and for the unions. People are worried about a government like this. But why do religious conservatives love Santorum from Pennsylvania? Well, he's advocated against abortion. He's advocated against homosexual marriage, for instance. But there's much more to it. There's much more to it, by the way, than that. And they're all important points. Let's back up. Didn't I do a show a week ago Monday where I said, where are the cultural values being discussed by any of the candidates? Didn't I do a show on that 10 days ago? I remember distinctly. I have the paper somewhere. I thought it was one of my best shows ever. Here it is. I should auction this off right now. Put the money in the legal fund. I don't have the date on it. Family values, my handwriting, character, not discussed by any candidate. One, what are family values? Two, which party better defends such family values and how? Three, is marriage still a valid institution? Four, call if you've been married over 5 or 10 years to the same person. Tell us why. I don't want those questions answered now. But I did a show on character 10 days ago. And not one of the candidates talked about character except Santorum or religious values. Romney is afraid of the topic because his advisors who are shafting him the way they shafted McCain. I'm telling you the way I see it. Romney is being run off the campaign trail by his advisors. If I were him, I'd fire them all today. Every one of them is sticking a knife in his back. A2 Brutus. You know, Mitt Romney, listen to Michael Savage. You've got a radio. You've got wonderful sons. They listen to this show. You're being shafted by your own advisors. They screwed John McCain, and they're going to screw you as well. I'm warning you, and this is a hope. I'm throwing you a life preserver. Stop listening to them. They're putting a knife in your back. That's what I'd like to say. But since nobody but a few 10 million people listen to the show, I don't think he heard me. I don't think he heard me. Instead, he'll go sit down with his legs crossed and talk to the subterraneans on CNN and think that that's going to get him elected. But is it working for him? It isn't, is it? It's not working for him talking to that subterraneans street slime, Wolf Blitzer. The knifer, Wolf Blitzer, the shiv pusher. It's not working for Romney. He won't come before people like you. He hates you. He despises you. He's sick of you. He thinks you're the unwashed, gun-toting, religious goons of America. Well, it's his loss. Santorum, though, is a family man. He's got a big family. He left the campaign trail last week to go back and be with his daughter in the hospital. He's into the culture wars. He's a homeschooling dad. He's a devout cradle Catholic. He was an altar boy. And he would spend Sunday mornings pushing hospital patients in wheelchairs to Mass. As a U.S. Senator, Santorum attended Mass at St. Joseph's on Capitol Hill each day before work, as opposed to Obama, who didn't know where a church was after that Reverend Wright left. He couldn't find any churches till recently, when suddenly he discovered Jesus again. Fact of the matter is, the evangelicals have even made him a Catholic, an honorary evangelical, according to stuff I've read. Millions and millions of socially conservative voters still distrust Mitt Romney because of his stances on abortion and same-sex marriage. That's the main reason that they've, in these small campaigns just now, went for Santorum. And he doesn't just talk about opposing abortion. He's actually legislated on it as a senator. He's also very strongly against homosexual marriage. He sponsored a constitutional amendment to ban homosexual marriage at a time when most Republicans were afraid of such a hot issue. Santorum is very heavily into real science as opposed to junk science pushed by Al Gore. This is something that's very important. Al Gore is a pseudo-faker, a pseudo-scientist rather, not scientist at all, and he promotes pseudoscience to push global warming, and Santorum doesn't buy it. Where does Romney stand on the fake global warming con men who have raped the economy? So I'll ask you again, why did Santorum beat Romney? Who would stand a better chance of beating Obama, sanctimonious Santorum or Mitt Romney? I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, okay, Rick Santorum is in the news now. He beat him in three conservative states. Well, let's say three GOP contests, a very small group of people. And I'm asking, who has a better chance of beating Obama, Romney or Santorum? And why did Santorum beat Romney? Okay, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to line 8, Mike in New York on WOR. Your opinion, please.
Hey, Mike, first off, I'd like to say that Santorum or Romney, none of the Republican candidates will beat Obama. It's a fact of the matter. Who they're throwing up is garbage.
But wait, hold on, stop for a minute. Why would you say that?
And, well, really, Santorum or Romney, and I will say, I consider myself more to the right. I don't identify
Mike,
with
Mike, Mike, I'm asking you why you say neither of them could beat Obama. I need you to please answer.
Well, first of all, you have Romney, who is the way it's all been running. He's too business for America. People don't like that, that he's too rich, and that, listen, I actually don't mind that first he gave all his children.
I heard you. Okay, number two, why can't Santorum beat Obama?
Why can't Santorum? Because the middle, anyone who's kind of that middle of Republicans won't vote for him. So they're going to go towards Obama, and he's only going
to... Wait. Middle Republicans are going to go for a communist?
But Michael, listen, I've been... Actually, I used to call myself part of the Savage Nation. This is perfect. I actually bought your book, Trickle Up Poverty. I read the first couple chapters of it, and no disrespect, you take it what you will, but I actually had to throw it out.
What are you talking about? You're attacking everyone. You're attacking Romney, Santorum, and me. So I know what you are. You're a BS artist who's a Democrat. So why don't you just come, just be a man. What are you really trying to say here?
My track record in voting is actually Republican.
I don't care what your track record is. You're not making any sense. You just said Romney can't win because he's too rich. Then you said Santorum can't win and Republicans are going to vote for Obama. Does that make sense to you?
So you're clearly you're saying you disagree with that. So you're saying...
All right, take a walk. No, there's no Republican who's ever voting for Obama. Okay, let's stop the double talk. You obviously work for a Democrat somewhere. You sound like you probably worked for Representative Wiener, probably ran his iPhone for him. That would be my guess. You were the one who taught Representative Anthony Wiener how to use an iPhone to take personal pictures of his underwear. Okay, let's go on to the callers, the real callers. New York, again, we'll try an OR caller again. Jim, welcome to the program.
Yes, Michael, I agree with your assessment of the situation, except I think that Romney's the guy who's going to beat Obama. I think there's a lot of Democrats who are pro-business Democrats who are really upset with the Obama administration, and I think they're powerful, and I think they're going to go with Romney. But I think they'd be...
I agree with you. Remember, Romney represents old money and big business to a great extent, and they are definitely jaundiced by this communist in the White House. They know who he is. They may not say it because they've got to do business with the government, but they're afraid of him. That is, they're afraid of Obama and what he's doing, stealing power, taxing businesses, attacking the rich. This is not the man they want to do business with.
Absolutely. And I think your assessment about why people are attracted to Santorum is spot on. I'm afraid, though, the country has fallen so far that that's not enough people to get somebody elected at a national level.
I agree. I think Santorum appeals to the Christian conservatives, God bless them, but they do not determine the outcome of the election any more than any other single group. The single most important group, as everyone will tell you, is the undecided group. That's 15% of those who actually vote. We don't know which way they would go, but let's ask ourselves this question. 15% of the of the voters who are not Democrat, not Republican, they have a picture. Obama's on one side of the stage and Romney's on the other. Who will they go for? Or Obama's on one side of the stage and Rick Santorum's on the other. Who will they go for? Really, that's what it comes down to. And why? You have to ask yourself that question, not what you think, but what the electability factor is. That's what I think is the important question of the day. Portland, Oregon, let's go across the country to the West Coast, obviously. Jason in Portland, Oregon, where the R has gone a long time ago. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, primaries are known to be notoriously inaccurate. And with such a small voter turnout, we really can't get a clear picture of who can actually carry the vote. I think Obama is going to really take this election because his policies as he's been in office have made all these candidates look like a single-issue candidate. They're all focusing on the economy. And
yeah, but Obama has decimated the military, has attacked the church, has destroyed NASA. I can go down the list. Don't you understand what he's done? The problem here is that the Republicans have not articulated that Obama is the problem. Because of that SOB Gingrich, they are almost unelectable. Gingrich has destroyed the Republican Party, if not the Republic itself. The man is the reason that we're still talking about the candidates instead of Obama's disastrous policies.
I think his overseas policies are great. I think how he's handling the Syria and Iran and Israel.
So you like the idea that Obama has brought about Arab fascism? You think that's a good thing?
Well, I'm former military, and I know a lot of...
I don't care what you are. It doesn't matter what you are. You could be JC himself. You didn't answer the question. You think that the Islamic fascism is a good thing?
Well, I personally think that the Arab Spring is a covert operation. I believe that
Wait, but what do you mean? A covert operation by whom?
I don't really want to go into it anymore.
All right, here we go, another military expert. They're all special forces and intelligence and Secret Service all in one.
Savage.
It is 34 minutes after the hour, Savage Meantime. Welcome back to the program. We're talking about Santorum. We're talking about Romney. We're talking about how Gingrich was set up by the liberal media specifically to undermine the Republicans, and that, in my opinion, it is Gingrich's responsibility for the debacle that we are looking at right now. You look at the face of that man. You look at the face of Gingrich, and you know what you see? You see the face of evil. It's right out of Orson Welles' A Touch of Evil. That's what I see. I see the penultimate greedy, narcissistic insider when I look at Gingrich. And he's unelectable. Gingrich is unelectable. This guy was unelectable. He is unelectable. He never should have been permitted to do this to the campaign, but he did it. So now we come down to a two-party race that includes Romney and Santorum. And I want to compare and contrast for you before we go on with our discussion. I want you to listen to Romney for a moment in this clip.
But we're going to take our message of liberty and prosperity to every corner of the country.
Oh, God.
And when this primary
That's
season...
That's the end of the road. That's it. Whoop, whoop. Were they got a Republican there on crack? Whoop, whoop. What was the whoop, whoop? What did he do that was so great? Whoop, whoop. There you go again. The boring Republican group. Whoop, whoop. Hysterical already because he said message of liberty and prosperity. When have I not heard that? What does that mean? Nothing. Generic garbage. Unelectable. Now, by comparison, I want you to listen to Santorum in 30.
That on those issues, health care, the environment, cap and trade, and on the Wall Street bailouts, Mitt Romney has the same positions as Barack Obama. And in fact, would not be the best person to come up and fight for your voices for freedom in America.
Well, he mentions issues, doesn't he? I don't know where Romney is on the issues tonight, by the way. So it's a very big deal what happened, even though it's a small group of folks, and mainly the most activist people came out to send the message that they care about family values in plain English, or cultural values, whichever way you want to put it. These are very important values, and Romney's afraid of them. Romney's trying to avoid them because he wants to get those voters, but he doesn't understand the most basic thing, I believe, about politics. The Democrats will never, ever vote for a Republican. Not in a million years. I don't care if you came out and said you're in favor of abortion, you're in favor of gay marriage, you're in favor of becoming a communist nation. If you're a Republican, they wouldn't vote for you. Do you understand that? Do you get it? They are as didactic and as tied to their doxy as Catholics were in the 4th century. That's what a Democrat is today. They are didactic communists, and they all toe the party line. You look at people who live in communist-dominated regions of America. You would call them liberal. I don't even use that phrase anymore. I stopped using the word liberal about a year ago. They're not liberals. They're all communists. They want the state to dictate your life from cradle to grave. They want to steal from those of us who work and give it to those who don't. They want to give more rights to the illegal alien than they give to the American citizen. I can go down the list. I'm not going to do it for you again. They are communists. By all means, by any analysis, they're pure communists, these diehard liberals. They may look like you, talk like you, walk like you, but they're subversives and they're communists, period. So I don't call them liberals anymore. Liberals died a long time ago in America. True liberalism is dead in America. They don't believe in freedom of choice. They don't believe in freedom of opinion. They don't believe in freedom of speech. They believe in dictating to you virtually everything you can think, everything you can breathe, and everything you can eat. Federal government came out yesterday attacking bread. The staff of life is now the problem of the schmucks in the U.S. government under Obama. They said, bread. Oh, look out for bread. Bread. Bread's worse for you than marijuana, worse for you than crack cocaine. Bread may be worse than heroin. That's their big problem. Not the drug scourge in America, but bread because it contains too much salt. This is an example of idiocy, the kind of idiocy you get with government-funded science and scientists. So we have tremendous problems in this communist country of ours under Obama. America has finally flirted with an overt communist president, and many of them are slowly awakening to his dictatorial nature and what he'd actually like to do to us if, God forbid, he should win again. And that's what this is all about from now right until November. That's what it's all about. We lose this one, it's anyone's guess how much longer there is in terms of human freedom in this country. You think that that's hyperbole? You're mistaken. I do this for a living. I study this for a living. You don't. God bless you. Go about your business. I have studied every president in my lifetime. I have never seen a president more obsessed with personal power than this one. Not in my lifetime. Can you name one who's done anything like this? Name one president who has been so obsessed with telling people how to live than Barack Obama. Tell me someone who's done more than him. Tell me one. So, okay, you've got FDR. You don't know who, nobody remembers him anymore. He was as close to Obama as any president, let's say, in modern times. FDR was a dictator. FDR was a naked socialist. FDR had to be stopped by the U.S. Supreme Court, as Obama will be on Obamacare, incidentally, and on many other issues. His attack on religious freedom is overwhelming, and it's backfiring amongst Catholics. Maybe the Christians can save this country by standing up to this atheist in the White House. Don't tell me about the Bible that they march around with on Sundays. I didn't see a Bible for over 2 years, did you? All of a sudden, the Bibles are out, and they're all putting on their Easter clothing. I don't buy it. I just simply don't buy it anymore. And I want to go in another area for a minute, since it's a talk show, and I'm not running for office. And that is this. I don't know how to put it without sounding like I'm just trying to sound like I'm patriotic. I actually went to sleep last night, and I said I love this country. I don't know why. I kind of know why. I was reviewing the novel that I'm writing, the new Jack Hatfield novel, which won't be out for a year. Don't worry, I'm not peddling a book. And there's a couple of scenes where the real heroes are not the heads of agencies, such as the head of the FBI, the head of the other agencies. You know who the heroes are in that book? It's the field agents. It's the cops in the black and white patrol cars, not the police chiefs. In other words, the political class is not to be trusted in this country. It's the guys on the ground who have saved this country and will save this country. They're my heroes. And when I put down the pen at midnight last night, after reviewing some of the characters who do some amazing things in my book, I said to myself, you know, I really love this country. I love everything about it. I love every race. I love every religion. I love every mountaintop. I love every grain of sand in the deserts. I love every tree. I love every insect in this country. I really love this country. I'm an immigrant son, I said to myself. How do I tell the people what's at stake? How in the world do I warn them what's at stake? I don't know how to do it in a few words. I have to do it on a daily basis, and I can only do what I can do. And I'm telling you, we are at a stage in our evolution as a nation that is about as catastrophic a stage as you can get to. That's right, a catastrophic stage. This country had a man who no one ever heard of foisted upon them by powers we cannot even imagine. Who was Barack Obama 4 years ago? You never heard of him. Nobody ever heard of him. Where'd he come from? Who funded this campaign? How did he beat Hillary Clinton? Who decided he should be president? And okay, fair enough. He became president. Young man, nice family, gave him a chance. He's far worse than anyone feared he would be. But none of the Republican candidates seem to understand that that's their job, which is to stand in opposition to socialism, if you want to put it on a light note. They're not doing it. They're afraid of the word. They're afraid to actually say the word because they underestimate the intelligence of the American people. They think you're too stupid to understand something as significant as socialism versus a free market. They're afraid of it because they've been bamboozled and beaten by the subterraneans like Wolf Blitzer and Matt Lauer and the other operatives of the big corporations who pay no taxes or few taxes. These mouthpieces exist for one reason only, and that reason is to make certain that their corporations pay no taxes. Make no mistake about it. They may talk the talk, but they're just stooges of their corporate bosses in that regard. And so I pay no attention to them. So now we come down to us. We actually have a choice here and a chance. The politicians come back to us every few years when they run for office. Otherwise, we live in a kind of slow-boiling dictatorship where the political class gets to do what it wants and ignore the people. And so we live in a dictatorship punctuated by occasional democracy called the elections. And so we didn't like that. So what did we do? We put out, in the state of California and others, referendums where the citizens could collect a certain number of signatures, clear it through the courts, get it on the ballot to make sure that it is constitutionally valid, and we vote on it. California, we did that. We voted against homosexual marriage because it was an affront to most people, even in this liberal state. The Hispanics voted against it. Black people voted against it. Chinese voted against it, meaning gay marriage. But yet, yesterday, what happened? What happened yesterday? The liberals on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most communist court in America, said to hell with the people. They said 52% of the vote can go to hell. I don't care how many hundreds of thousands or millions went to the poll. We don't care. We're God Almighty. We have a black robe. And so they threw away our democracy. They trashed it. I would have expected the Republicans to go berserk over this. But they didn't. They didn't say very much about it. They mumbled something. And that's the problem that we have today. When we exert our freedom at the ballot box, it's taken from us unless it goes along with the liberal shibboleths of the day. And so, therefore, what should we do? We should believe in a system that, I must use the wrong word, should we believe in a system that shafts us every time we assert our true powers as citizens? Why should we believe in a system like that? Well, most of us don't, which is why most people don't vote. They've given up on the system. They've turned their backs on the system that is so corrupt and so wildly bought and sold like a Las Vegas set of dice that they don't even want to vote anymore. They feel it's been stolen a long time ago. Many savvy people say, Savage, you know, we admire your passion. We admire your Boy Scout view of the world. But why are you getting so excited? This was over a long time ago, and they'll trace it back to, well, their favorite boogeyman, whether it was Dwight D. Eisenhower or the Federal Reserve or whoever it may be, and they'll say it was stolen from us a long time ago. Well, I don't believe it. I don't believe it, and I believe that this election is the most important election in my lifetime for sure, and certainly it should be the most important election in your lifetime. If you like Obama's attacks on the military, if you like Obama destroying our NASA, the greatest space agency the world had ever seen. Do you know that the Chinese are now developing space satellites and we can't do this anymore? Do you have any idea what that means? That China's now going to dominate space? How did this happen? Do you understand that it's treasonous to put American astronauts on a Russian rocket? And he did that? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? No, because you didn't see it on television. You're watching some wonderful, good-looking man throw a piece of pigskin around on a stadium floor. So this is very real stuff to me. Trickle-down tyranny, crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America. My new book, April 3rd, I'm very proud of it. I believe it will be my last nonfiction book. I'm finished. I don't want to write anymore. Because if he gets reelected, I will not write anymore. Do you know why? Well, I can't tell you why, but I think you can pretty much figure it out. If Obama gets elected again, this will be the last nonfiction book I ever write. It might be the last book I'm ever allowed to write. I can guarantee you this. If Obama gets reelected, there'll be no talk radio as you know it. It'll disappear. Remember, in the beginning of this regime's takeover of America, they tried to eliminate talk radio. Do you remember that? You forgot all of this. I didn't. This is my profession. Do you remember all of the shills for communism and fascism who were talking about eliminating talk radio because it wasn't fair? Wasn't fair. They own all the media except for a few conservative talk shows, and that's not good enough for them? No, it's not good enough for them because they want absolute power. No talk radio will end. The internet will not be what you think it is. The drones are flying all over America, spying on every citizen. How long do you think your freedoms are going to last with an administration that's so out of control with its desire to control your every breath? How much longer do you think it'll be before this Brave New World becomes a nightmarish Brave New World? I'll be right back. So in these three small contests, Santorum wins, a stunning success, and now a Romney nomination looks far from inevitable because the Christian conservatives have come out in droves for Santorum, and they're saying we don't like Romney because he's too milquetoast, in plain English. He's not a bad man. He's a good man, but he's too milquetoast for us, and he won't represent us. We want to go with a guy who we know will, you know, speak for us. And we live in very amazing times. Many people who are very religious, Christians, Jews, think that we're living in biblical times all over again. Well, you don't have to go further than Isaiah, which I've quoted before in this show, and I won't bore you with it. But listen to this one. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. And the people shall oppress one another. Every man shall oppress his fellow, and every man shall oppress his neighbor. The child shall behave insolently against the aged, and the base against the honorable. And he goes on. And Isaiah was a prophet, as you well know. And he was really seeing the world as it was then. And it's very, very much similar to what the world is today. Man against man. And then he says, as for my people, a babe is their master, and women rule over them. Sounds very much like the White House. And women rule over them. There was Susan Rice going around begging people in the Middle East not to hurt each other. They looked at her like, what are you kidding me, lady? Get out of here. It was unbelievable to me. The Lord will enter into judgment with the elders of his people and the princes thereof. It is ye that have eaten up the vineyard. The spoil of the poor is in your houses. And he goes on. He didn't like that the spoil of the poor was in their houses. And he said, what do you mean that you crush my people and grind the face of the poor? See, God actually loves the poor. He doesn't spit upon the poor. He doesn't tell you to make the poor rich, but he does tell you to care for the poor. You've got to understand that. It's a very important point. And then Isaiah says, the daughters are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet. Therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will lay bare their secret parts. And then they go on to a terrible prophecy. Isaiah goes on to a terrible prophecy of what happens to people who walk around with such arrogance. And I'll leave it, you know, at that, whether the rest is literal or figurative or fantasy or the musings of a depressed old man, an old olive grower whose orchard dried up, or he was deficient in vitamin B3. Whichever way you want to look at all of it is fine. Doesn't matter to me. All I can tell you is this. The Book of Ages is the Rock of Ages. The Rock of Ages is the Book of Ages. And the Rock of Ages has been around for millennia, and it's not going to go away because Nancy Pelosi's backyard wants it to be burned. For though thy people, O Israel, be as the sand of the sea, only a remnant of them shall return. And extermination is determined, overflowing with righteousness. Now, what in the world did he mean by that? Did Isaiah foresee the Holocaust? I've asked myself this for many years. Isaiah said about the Jews, an extermination is determined, overflowing with righteousness. And then he goes on to what's going to happen to the Jews in Isaiah, those of you who believe in prophecy. And the reason I'm reading this to you is because the Jewish people in Israel right now are at a point of no return. They're hemmed in by the most hateful human beings on the planet. People who have, and they don't know how to stop killing each other, let alone Christians and Jews. And the wolves that are circling Israel would like to tear each one of them asunder, tear them from limb to limb. Unfortunately, there are many people in America who are supporting the wolves who would tear the Jews to pieces. But let us hope that the Jewish people at this point have learned how to defend themselves after rendering themselves defenseless by being overly concerned with the good book. Let us hope that today with an Uzi and they that harass Judah shall be cut off. You see, the Bible prophecy is a nuclear war. I have found it in this book. I really didn't even mean to get into this. I didn't even mean to go here. I wanted to stick to Santorum and Romney, but I would tell you this. I have found in the Old Testament, which I don't read on a regular basis because I'm not a very religious man, prophecies about a nuclear war, descriptions of what people look like as their hair is falling out. That has to be a description of a nuclear war. The symptomology described in the Bible is quite shockingly, here it is, I found it, Zechariah. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. All I can say to all of you people who think Israel's going to go by the way of the ancients, you're wrong. Israel will survive, but it will be the worst bloodbath you've ever seen in the history of the world.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The president over the last few years has tried to tell you that he, in fact, the government, can give you rights. The government can take care of you and provide for you. They can give you the right to health care, like in Obamacare. Well, look what happens when the government gives you rights. The government can take them away. When government gives you rights, the government can tell you how to exercise those rights.
Well, there it is. Santorum won some small, not primaries, really. They were really small referendums on cultural values over Romney, who's just standing on the sidelines and not really taking this to the people the way he needs to. Romney is speaking in generalities with homilies that the people are not responding to, while Santorum seems to be speaking from the heart and to the conservative base on the issues that matter to most of us. At the same time, I want to go to another question, which is Syria. I covered it yesterday, and I'm afraid to tell you that Obama and Hillary Clinton and the U.S. Pentagon have begun a preliminary internal review of U.S. military capabilities about going into Syria, if you can believe this. They have learned nothing from Vietnam, nothing from Iraq, nothing from Afghanistan. Apparently, the geniuses in the U.S. government are now talking about military options. And this is shocking. It's shocking to believe that they would go to this stage so quickly, and we've talked about it yesterday. I can ask you a question. There's no point in talking about it again. I totally oppose a military intervention, military invention in Syria. Totally oppose it. It could set off World War III. But you have a doofus like John McCain, a war hawk who is so closely aligned with the military-industrial complex that he is basically calling for military options in Syria. Here is a man who doesn't even understand what he has wrought in Libya. And now he wants to do the same thing in Syria. Does he have any idea what could happen? So that's another topic. And I'd like to ask you a question right now in the Savage Nation, which is why did Santorum beat Romney? And who could better beat Obama in the general election come November, Romney or Santorum? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. And I invite you to call on one other topic. It's a personal one. Coming soon, the new bestseller from Michael Savage, the New York Times bestselling author, Trickle Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. Not available. 2 months from now, the book will be out. But I want you to look at the cover. I want you to read just the first paragraph, and I want you to tell me what you think of it, because I can still change it. How do you like that? I can tell you right now that they originally had me in a black leather jacket. I said, throw it away. It's too MSNBC. I don't do black leather. So there we are, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. Virginia Mitchell, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to call and make a quick comment about comments that George Soros had made about how if Romney is elected, there's virtually no difference, you know, as far as maybe he's concerned or just as far as the presidency is concerned between those two. And I think that it was kind of interesting when he decided to make that comment, when it seemed like maybe Romney was separating himself as a clear favorite. Mm-hmm. I think that he realized that probably Romney was the most electable, and therefore imposed, you know, the largest threat to defeating Obama. So I think that probably what happened was he decided that was going to be the case. If he came out and sort of in an indirect way supported Romney, that would all of a sudden the evangelical right would completely disband, you know, from Romney and therefore go to Santorum in hopes of possibly having Santorum.
Well, I think you're giving Soros a little too much credit. He's a very dangerous man in my estimation. He is the shadow behind Obama in my estimation. He has more power than most sovereign nations in my estimation. And he is very much the puppet master of Barack Obama in my estimation. And so every time Obama attacks the very rich and calls for fairness, I say, hey, that's a good idea, Mr. Obama. Why don't you start with General Electric and George Soros? Why don't you look at the taxes that the corporations pay, such as Microsoft? Why don't you talk to us about George Soros and his involvement and the hedge fund operators? Why don't you tax the hedge fund billionaires, Mr. Obama? But you see, he never talks about that, does he?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, so that I'm just basically feeding back to you. Of course the hedge fund billionaires want Obama in power because he talks the talk, but he doesn't go after them. Obama, when he talks about the rich, means a middle-class couple, two people in a family working. That's who he's targeting. That's my estimation. Let's take the callers on so many other topics. So it's a big deal right now. It may not be a big deal a week from now, the Santorum upset, but Romney didn't really campaign. Romney is sort of on the milquetoast issue. Romney doesn't get down to the issues sufficient for the Christian conservative and the Tea Party activists. And again, I can't believe Romney hasn't yet understood why he's not catching fire with the American people. Here's clip 24. Listen to this, Romney, 24.
And he said progress would be determined by, again, quote, whether the average American family saw its income go up instead of down. And during the last 4 years, the median income in this country has fallen by about 10%.
Again, okay, stop right there. Wrong road. Again, he is listening to his misadvisors who destroyed McCain. Again, he's not going to the core issues. He's talking about median income falling by 10%. What does that mean to the average person? It means nothing, absolutely nothing. Romney is not going after the core of his base, which is the conservative. The conservative, not only the fiscal conservative, ladies and gentlemen, but in my estimation, the social conservative. Santorum speaks to the social conservative in the electorate. And so that's why he had this little upset in these three states. And the longer Romney doesn't understand that he must get involved in the culture wars, the worse the chances are that he will be the nominee. Now, as far as the final election, you know, Who knows? I don't really know whose machine. The Romney machine is obviously much bigger than the Santorum machine. And that's a good thing, I guess. But I don't think it guarantees an election of Romney. Another article on the bottom of michaelsavage.com. Obama sends L.A. Dems $500,000 to upgrade a yacht worth less than $100,000. Can you believe this story? They took an old aging hulk of a yacht that's used by Los Angeles for personal junkets, they say, to show the port. You hear this? And instead of putting in two new diesel engines for $100,000, they took a government, a federal grant, and put in two green engines on a yacht that's worth less than $100,000, because I know boats. They put in $500,000 worth of green engines. You hear this? That's what they're doing with the so-called stimulus money. It's a small potato story, but it's indicative of what's going on under the guise of green. Here's a story from the Hollywood Reporter on my website. You want to make money in Hollywood? Conservative movies make more money than liberal movies. Unfortunately, there are very few conservative movies. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Arizona. Nikki, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, my darling. I just want you to hold on to your hat now. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I want to tell you that the D before my name stands for displaced, disenfranchised, disillusioned, disappointed, disgusted. And I think the D before Obama's name right now stands for dangerous.
Whoa, I'm one of those Democrats. Nikki, where did you come up with all of this?
I've had over 2 years to stew in my juices about this. I did not vote for this gentleman, which is saying something nice. But Nikki,
you're in Arizona. You better be very careful, because there could be a drone over your house right now, monitoring your distaste for President Obama, and it could be recorded in the DHS database. You may not be able to fly anymore if Big Sis gets a hold of this conversation.
Say that, don't say. Hey, it's an awesome community out here. We absolutely love it. And I want to say that I really believe that the political machine would have us believe that there are not as many folks out there as me, as there are like me, who feel very displaced. We did not vote for this administration. We're very... There's no one word to describe it. It's just horrendous.
But you say you're a lifetime Democrat. You didn't vote for Obama. Who'd you vote for?
I voted for McCain.
Okay, I see what you mean. Then why would you vote for McCain if you're a Democrat?
Because I started.
Answer
following...
because McCain is a Democrat.
Well, I started following the debates very early on. The first time I'd ever heard Obama's name, I thought, boy, I better find out very quickly. I was taught to be politically astute at a young age. And we figured out very, very fast this guy was dangerous. We figured it out so quickly.
All right. In a nutshell, what has he done? Give me the top five things he's done that shows him to be dangerous in your mind as a lifetime D.
Okay, relationship with Israel. I mean, I come from a family that mourned when Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated, and I'm a Greek Orthodox. And we've seen that completely deteriorate in a way that is just, it's hard to imagine. It flies.
Yes, he's catering to the wolves that want to devour the Jews. Let's be very blunt.
Fine. The issue with Obamacare, we sat in this house, we always joke, we keep pulling out the imaginary elephant gun and shooting the television every time we heard about this. We followed every single moment from beginning to end. Well, there is not,
Obamacare is socialized medicine and worse. They have now attacked the chaplains in the military. They've attacked the Catholic Church. They're getting such blowback from the Catholics that they're thinking of modifying their fascism with regard to take it or die. So the fact of the matter is, okay, you've got two issues. The abandonment of Israel, forcing socialized medicine down everybody's throats. Any other issues?
ACORN.
What's ACORN mean to you? What does ACORN mean to you? Using thugs in the street to intimidate voters and to stock the ballots? Is that stuff the ballots?
We had a connection. You remember when they were standing outside trying...
No, I understand, but no one's... When have you last heard the word ACORN from Santorum or Romney? Never. No. Okay, that's three. Give me two more.
They were intimidating these voters. It was beyond...
I know. All right, so number four.
Okay, let's see.
You don't know. You see, this is the problem. I do this for a living. I can give you 50 or 100 things that he's done that are shocking. But most Americans don't know because Newt Gingrich has come along and so muddied the waters in his attacks on Romney and the others that people don't even understand what Obama has done to this country. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, so we can move on. I mean, we've covered the Santorum-Romney thing, and we don't know where it's going to go tomorrow, but with the destructive Gingrich, anything's possible. Gingrich is definitely making it the world safer for Obama. There's no question about that. 1-800-449-8255, any topic right now is fair game. We can move on to other topics. Stephanie in Hawaii. Aloha, Stephanie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about your book cover. I just looked on it online.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe you should, instead of your arms crossed, maybe you should have holding the scales of justice with it completely being off kilter.
That's interesting. Well, let me explain why I just simply made it straightforward, wearing a jacket and a turtleneck with a title, Trickle-Down Tyranny. Speaks for itself. The publisher first, you're not going to believe it, had me holding up like a medieval shield. I said that is so incredibly bad. I mean, I'm not living in the middle evil. Then they put me in a leather jacket, which is so 1990s MSNBC. I got rid of that. So I said to them, just put me in a sport jacket, please. That's who I am. You know what I'm saying? See,
yeah.
So I don't want to overplay the position. The title is so powerful. Listen to the theme. You ready? Will President Obama succeed in his plans to transform the greatest engine of freedom the world has ever seen into a top-down, heavy-handed authoritarian regime, if not a dictatorship? Or will the American people succeed in exposing and ridding themselves of this new Leninist? The book is all about that. That's what's important, not the design, in a way.
Well, I'm going to have to do what I did with your last book. I made a magnet of it and put it on my car. A huge magnet.
A magnet of my book?
Yeah, of trickle up poverty.
What do you mean? You put it in the rear window?
No, on the back of my bumper on my minivan.
Oh, I see. You made a poster of the cover. And
yeah.
And how many liberals have cut you off as a result?
Oh, I just got yelled at. Oh, actually, my car, they stole one of them. And my car,
well, of course, in Hawaii, that's the land of the tolerant liberal, isn't it? Where as long as you speak Democrat socialist speak, you're allowed to speak. But the minute you stand for anything else, they attack you. It's the land of the welfare recipient, Hawaii.
And my car actually was bashed in.
Well, of course, that's how liberals respond in the middle of the night with a brick or a stone. We understand that they're fascists. They don't believe in a marketplace of ideas. But I believe, Stephanie, that that's very kind of you to even look at my website and give me a comment. 1-800-449. Who's better to beat Obama, Romney or Santorum? Donna in New York, fire away. You've got 50 seconds in this segment.
Okay, Michael, do you feel that God, you sense in your bones that God is going to make himself known, that God is going to, his hand is going to move, or do you think he's going to be quiet? What is your feeling?
You mean between now and November?
Before a nuclear war, before horrible things happen, do you sense that God might do something?
God sees the truth but waits. I don't know what God will do because I'm only a man. That's the best answer I can give you. If I were to say otherwise, I'd be a false prophet. And the next thing, I'd be wearing eyeglasses without a prescription and talking about my hemorrhoids and be thrown off Fox News. So I defer to the fact that God speaks the truth but waits.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Many topics. Here's a new one. Women in combat policy could change. The liberals and the feminists have convinced the Obama administration, which has decimated the military, destroyed NASA, given China a clear lead in space, is now proposing to change the current policy, which restricts women from combat roles. It's not bad enough what they've done thus far to the military. They now want for all ground combat jobs to be open to women. Well, can we recommend some women to go into such units? I mean, can we, the people, say, good, go, go, girl, go? Do you have any idea what this means? Why is it dangerous for the entire unit for women to serve in combat? Let's put it to you that way. I'd like some men who've actually been in combat, frontline combat, to tell us what you think. I'm not a military man, but I have common sense and I study things. I think it's absurd, crazy, insane to put women into ground combat jobs. Women make great pilots. They made phenomenal helicopter pilots, etc. I'm sure they're fabulous officers on ships. But in frontline combat units, they will put the entire patrol at risk, would be my estimation. Pittsburgh, PA, Louise, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Last night you talked about who had the killer instinct in the candidates. And I
yes.
think the killer instinct is the women who will go out door-to-door, toe-to-toe, and get their candidate elected. And I don't know about combat, but in terms of politics, they'll do it. The women voted against Gingrich 8 out of 11 in Florida. They defeated him.
Right, of course, because Gingrich is a pig and very unattractive at that. But where would the women go? Would they rather have Romney or Santorum?
I think they'd rather have Santorum. They're the rest of the
why? Well, why Santorum? Romney's a handsome man. Why Santorum?
Because Santorum speaks to their hearts, and the rest of the feministas will be out there too busy taking the pill and fornicating to get their candidate elected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think you make a very good point. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let us go to Austin, Texas. Don, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
I think the reason a lot of people are having trouble with Romney, I know I am, the guy just has the same aloof, imperialistic image that Obama does. I think that's why he's sort of...
Oh, that kind of disc, like I'm above you?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the guy ran the Olympics. How many people in the world can say they ran the Olympics, right? So this is like another line on his resume. You could make that argument. I'm making an argument, but
No, I understand what you're saying. He's got the patrician look, in other words.
Well, yeah. I mean, Santorum has a curmudgeon kind of quality to him. You could put.
Yeah, he does. That's true. He looks like almost an incomplete version of Jerry Seinfeld.
You could see yourself putting your arm around him, sitting down, having a prune Danish with him or something. I can't see that you could do that with Romney. And I think
if you look at Santorum's portrait closely, he does look like he's a gene short of being a Jerry Seinfeld, doesn't he?
He does. I mean, I'm from Pennsylvania originally. I'm from living in Texas now. He's got just a real, you could see yourself walking out your house, seeing him picking up his paper in the morning, saying, you know, hi, how you doing, Rick? That kind of thing. I think with Romney.
All right. So the average six-pack, Joe Sixpack would like him and they feel comfortable with him. Romney, on the other hand, they don't feel comfortable. How about sitting down for a beer with Obama? Would that be possible?
Well, you know, I guess if you, got in trouble with the police department, you had to have a little powwow with him.
Right. I know. No, remember that one? Go back to the beginning. The Republicans are missing so many opportunities to remind America who they're running against that it's frightening, truthfully. They've had every opportunity at every debate to remind America what this is all about, and they really have failed. And that's because they let subversives like Wolf Blitzer lead them around by the nose. They could have stopped him. The only one, by the way, to his credit, the only one who stood up to these vermin, the only person who stood up to these subversives was Newt Gingrich, incidentally, to his credit. To his credit. 1-800-449-8255 on the issue of women in combat, yes or no. Marcus, New York, WOR, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi. I got 29 months in Iraq, and the idea of women in combat is a joke, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, I want to hear why. Tell me why, if a woman's willing to risk her life, she shouldn't be able to go out on patrol. Why?
Well, besides the rigors of combat is one, like a woman can't really go 40 days without a shower. But the main point is this. Let's say a male soldier goes out on patrol and gets shot in the chest, and a woman happens to be injured as well in the arm. Another male soldier will instinctively go and help the woman before he helps the male simply because it's a woman, instead of helping the male who has a life-threatening injury.
Mm, the chivalry will kick in, and although she has a lesser injury, he'll go to help her. What about this? A male in the combat unit is injured. Could she carry him off the battlefield? Answer no.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I've been on 35-mile ruck marches with 75-pound packs on my back. There is no way the average woman could ever be able to handle that.
Well, that's the thing. Then they'll change the rules and say it's too tough for them and it's not fair and that it's bullying if they can't complete the course. Change it to a two-minute walk with a feather on your back. That's the next thing. It's going to weaken the military as sure as I'm standing here. That's it. Plain English. It's common sense. But that doesn't stop the head of the Defense Department at Pentagon to push this feminist claptrap on the combat units. It's frightening to see this.
They turned the military into a social experiment. They did it with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and God knows if they do it with women in combat. But
Marcus, I want to ask you about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They change it to open homosexuality. Has that affected the military from your point of view, really?
Absolutely. I'm a tank commander from 4th Infantry Division. It has absolutely affected it. There's very few combat soldiers that were in favor of it, not because they're prejudiced against it. It's all about morale. It's all about cohesion. And we shower together in combat. We shower together in the field, and we sleep together, and it's tight-knit. To know that someone is a homosexual in the group wouldn't necessarily cause anger or anything, but it would be a distraction, and no one would want to be around it, and it's just not a place for it.
So how is a woman going to shower in combat? Let's go to that next level. What is she going to do? She needs a separate shower? All the men are showering, and she needs a separate shower now? So then they have to carry extra water and an extra tarp to shield her from the men's eyes? Is that what they have in mind in the Pentagon?
It's funny you mention that, because when I was in Mosul, we had a combat cameraman. She was a female. She followed us around and took pictures of us and documented us. And we actually had to do that very thing. We had to build her own shower, give her own little bathroom all by herself, and give her all the special treatment simply because she was a female.
Insanity. And they're putting women on submarines, which have limited space. And what are they going to do, take out one torpedo tube and turn it into a beauty parlor?
I don't know. That's a good question.
No, I mean, that's the thinking. That would be Panetta's thinking, that they would sacrifice one missile silo for a personal beauty parlor for women on submarines, because what's important is that the women feel comfortable.
Right. Exactly.
Marcus, how does it feel, having come from the realities of life and death, to go back to New York and look at, I mean, regular life? I mean, how does it look to you?
Oh, my God. I just recently came down on recruiting duty, which is why I'm here. And none of the high schools even let us in to talk to seniors. I mean, the dropout rate in New York is huge, but they won't let
I'm sorry, I missed it. You're in the recruitment area of the military. The dropout rate of what?
Of high school students. I got put on temporary recruiting duty for a couple of years. It's a temporary assignment. And the dropout rates around here are huge. And yet none
you mean
of the
in, you mean in the high schools?
Absolutely.
But I mean, how does the world look to you when you go off duty and you're walking in the streets, I would assume in Manhattan, is that correct?
No, I'm down in Brooklyn, doctor.
All right, fine. You're in the streets of Brooklyn after work. What do the streets look like to a man who's been in life and death combat is what I'm getting at?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, there's so much trash piled in Brooklyn, it doesn't look that much different from Mosul.
Oh, God. Well, you can thank Mayor Bloomberg and the unions for that. But do you sense danger in the streets, or do you feel safe in the streets?
Honestly, I'm pretty supported around here. Like, you got the gangbangers running around and stuff, but for the most part, people respect me, and they respect my rank, and they respect my position, and I get things. People buy me lunch occasionally, but for the most part...
Oh, you mean when you're in uniform? Of course the American people respect you and want to give you support. That's the beauty of America. But no, I'm asking a different question, Marcus, and I hate to keep pressing you. You, man, the man inside that uniform, when you walk down the street, do you sense the world in a different way than you did before you went into combat?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, yes. And it's just people don't understand how easy they have it. That's the main thing. Like, I hear I hear people complaining about this and that, and they have no idea how small their problems are compared
right.
to what combat soldiers have been through. They have no idea.
I hear you. So that goes back to the primary question. You've got Panetta, the most left-wing fanatic in the history of the military, changing the military as rapidly as possible, transforming it into the image of Obama, and now they're proposing that women serve in frontline combat units without any regard to the realities on the ground. Marcus, I'm going to send you a gift of some kind for serving our country. Will you folks please take down Marcus's name? I can't get him trickled down tyranny. It's not ready, but I'll send you trickle-up poverty, which is definitely ready. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Question on the Savage Nation, hard hat Democrats, who will they choose? Hard hat Democrats, you call them Joe Sixpack, you can call them anything you want, Joe Sixpack, hard hat Democrats. Are they aware that Obama killed the Keystone Pipeline, which would have created thousands of jobs? How many other job killing decisions has this fanatic made while in power? Why haven't the Republicans taken the opportunity of exposure to point out all of these disastrous decisions by the Obama machine instead of attacking each other? They should have focused on what they would do to defeat Obama. Instead, they let Newt Gingrich rip them to pieces and they had to defend themselves. And that was the end of the road. Then they let subversives like Wolf Blitzer throw them loaded questions to attack each other. That was the end of the road. This did not have to happen. They could have taken these last months of debates and used these debates to educate the viewer, those who are interested in politics, to the dangers of Obama's policies and what they would do to restore America to his greatness. They didn't do that. They've talked in homilies, they've talked in circles, and they've attacked each other. And that's why we're in trouble right now. Now, here's another little piece of advice for the geniuses running the campaigns. And I know many of them listen to this show to see what the true conservative in America actually thinks. Make no mistake about it. I happen to know for a fact that although they won't let their candidates near me, they listen and they report to the candidate what we're talking about. So here's a little advice. You're barking up the wrong tree if you're talking about the economy. And the reason is the very same powers that wrecked the economy to put Obama in power are now creating a fix for the economy to make certain that everything's coming up roses just around August, September, and October before the election. You'll notice the economy is a little better, isn't it? Things are a little better. Things look a little better for some. How did that happen? The very same forces that destroyed the economy to put the unknown Obama into power are now suddenly playing with the money supply, playing with the credit supply, playing with programs to make it look as though things are better. And so for Romney to get up and say, well, the average income went down 10%, wrong, down the wrong path. And that, again, comes back to the first question. Why did Santorum soar in these three states? Answer, because Santorum didn't waste his time talking about 10%. He talked about cultural issues. He talked about the war against the church, the war against the family, the war against the unborn, the war against mother and father, etc. And so it resonated with people in those states, as it will with people in America. And I think that the hard hat Democrat, especially the Catholic hard hat Democrat, would leave the Democrat fold if they had a candidate who articulated their concerns on a cultural as well as an economic level. So that's my particular position. I want to go back to this other thing about women in combat. The psychotics who are wrecking the military, the psychotics who are pushing their social agenda over the survivability of a frontline combat unit, the psychotics are now saying, oh, women serve in the military. We want them in every combat unit. We want them out there on the rocks with the men. Without any thought as to what this actually means, the psychotics from Harvard, the lunatic fringe from Harvard and Yale and Berkeley, the lunatic fringe from the worst universities in the world, the psychotic communist universities are now saying, oh, because I believe women can serve on frontline combat units, we're going to do it. We don't care what those right-wing crackers say out there in combat. The hell with them. We don't care. We're going to put women in combat because women can fly. So that's what they're doing right now. Well, what do you think? I want to talk to combat veterans. I want to know what you think. Las Vegas, George, tell us your experience. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I'm a Vietnam veteran, 65 years old, and I would not want to serve with a woman. She wouldn't be able to throw a grenade, number one.
George, you're saying the woman would be what, please?
She would have a hard time throwing a grenade at the enemy if it got down to that point where the combat was close enough to be able to throw a grenade. If I got injured, is she going to be able to pull me off the battlefield? I doubt it.
Well, that's the question. Can she carry a 165-pound man off a battlefield? Does that matter to Leon Panetta?
In my opinion, no. She can't do it. In my opinion, that Leon Panetta couldn't care the least about a combat veteran.
Well, I don't think he could carry a 10-pound hamburger off a combat field. I got a laugh out of you. I got a laugh out of you. That's a good laugh. It's a good throaty smoker's laugh. I like it. You don't hear any of those anymore. They're illegal. Watch out for the overflying drone. If they hear that you are a smoker who has a good throaty laugh, they're liable to take you in for educational training to make certain that you no longer laugh with a throaty laugh. Pennsylvania, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. How are you this evening?
What's on your mind?
Well, as I told your call screener, I'm a history master's candidate at Slippery Rock University. My specialty is military history, and I wanted to kind of throw a bit of a historical spin on the question of women in combat.
I'd love to hear it.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
The way I see it, there's three different ways of looking at this. There's the 21st or 20th century male way of looking at it, which is that we don't want to put our daughters out on the front lines because of what could possibly happen to them. Highly calling their gender into question. Some of your other callers...
Let's stop right there. Are you telling me that fanatic Islamists would treat a woman captive?
What I'm dialing in on is that's the exact problem, is that is most likely what would happen. I mean, what can you say would happen to a woman being held by a bunch of Wahhabi Islamists that really don't see women as a equal gender like the West does?
Due to an American Christian woman.
Exactly, and that's my point, is that the war that we're fighting right now against the rise of a second caliphate very easily could be, women on the front line would be drugged into situations like that where they would be mutilated, where they would be raped, where things that we could only imagine in the darkest depths of our psyche could be expressed.
Yeah, well, don't tell that to CNN, because tomorrow they'll run a show showing you how peace-loving Islamists really are, if only we would get to know them better. So from a historical perspective, in terms of women in combat, which nations today have women on front line? Does Israel have women in front line combat units, do you know?
I don't know offhand. What I will do is I'll throw two more historical examples at you. There was a woman who was extremely prolific in World War II by the name of Ludmilla, and give me a second here.
But Laura, here's the problem, and I have to move on because we're almost out of time. The professor has professor's knowledge of women in combat, which is good unto itself. I'm all for education. But I heard from combat veterans, one from Iraq and one from Vietnam, and they said no women in combat for practical reasons. Could a woman carry an injured man off the battlefield? Both said absolutely not. And they gave other reasons why, but that doesn't stop the radical feminists from Harvard inside the Obama administration. The women, no doubt, who put the 22 SEALs on that Chinook helicopter and killed them all. The very same women generals, or worse yet, the women lawyers from the psychotic institutions of law, are the women who have destroyed the SEALs and are now going to destroy the military altogether. And make no mistake about it, that's their goal. They want to feminize the military to the point that we can't even fight a war. Make no mistake about it, it's trickle-down tyranny in every avenue of our life.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yeah. it's on MichaelSavage.com today. Everything, everything, everything. Well, there it is. You've been waiting for it. Top left. I'm 2 months ahead of myself, but coming soon, you can see the cover. You get a behind-the-curtains peek at Trickle-Down Tyranny. Tell me how I look. Good, bad, or indifferent? Is it good, bad, and ugly? Good, bad, or ugly? The book title, Trickle-Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. Let me ask you a question. Am I wrong in saying will Obama succeed in his plans to transform the greatest engine of freedom the world has ever seen into a top-down, heavy-handed authoritarian regime, if not a dictatorship? Or will you, the American people, succeed in exposing and ridding themselves of this new Leninist? Check it out on MichaelSavage.com. Santorum sweep shakes up race. Of course he won Colorado, Missouri, and Minnesota because Romney didn't campaign. Romney is not conservative enough. And, of course, the numbers were very low. It doesn't really mean that much, but it does tell us that the people are not that happy with Romney. There's no question about it. Savage said founders envisioned a petty dictator like Obama, which is why they created a separation of powers. The dependency index has shot up 23% under President Obama, the biggest two-year jump since Jimmy Carter was president. Jimmy Carter, too, without the snakes and the strychnine. Drones over U.S. get okayed by Congress. How do you like that? How do you like that your Congress is afraid of you? After Santorum's stunning success, a Romney nomination looks far from inevitable. Mr. Romney, Savage calling Romney, you still have a chance. Stop listening to your stupid advisors. Get down there and talk to the conservatives on the Savage Nation. This is a last-minute appeal to you, Romney. You have a chance to take over, but you're not doing it. You're listening to the same people who shafted McCain. Don't say I didn't tell you. Study says radical U.S. Muslims pose little danger. I don't believe the study. It's a set piece. Obama and communist press make push to end U.S. Constitution. That's real. A dissenting Proposition 8 judge on gay marriage says the optimal partnership is man and a woman. Oh, how shocking. One judge out of the triumvirate says man and woman is optimal. How dare he? I guess they'll throw him off the bench. Obama loses another $500 million to a car company, another electric car that nobody wants. Obama silences military chaplains. No separation of church and state for him. Oh, no. Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis broke with ranks. And he says military leaders are lying to us. Afghanistan is a disaster. Commie court overturns will of the people, supports gay marriage, even though 52% of Californians said no. Obama returning $200,000 tied to pardon request for Mexican fugitive. Did you see Savage's USA Today column, Marines honor desecrated by media? Read it if you haven't. Bears kept in tiny cages by Chinese for their bile commit suicide with hunger strike. Shame on the Chinese, except there is no shame in China. San Quentin inmate admits killing a fellow prisoner. Why? The slain inmate in his cell had killed a 9-year-old girl in a drunken crash, and for this white power advocate, it was a 9-year-old girl, and he said that's the reason he killed him. Okay, let's let that one go. Remember the false charges against Police Commissioner Kelly's Marine hero son, Greg Kelly? Who took him to her office and had sex with him and then said rape? Guess what? No charges and rape accusation against Greg Kelly. What I want to see is charges against the false accuser. The day we start bringing charges against false accusers is the day I'm living in America again. What else is on Savage Nation? What's on MichaelSavage.com? Well, everything that I have mentioned and plenty more. The only thing you don't have there are my menus for meatballs. Rick rolls. Well, that's like egg rolls, except with a person inside, a Rick roll. If you want a Rickroll, you can go to Missouri, you can go to Colorado and Minnesota, and you can get a Rickroll. Here in California, we got egg rolls. State of California broke, spent $500,000 to upgrade a luxury yacht worth only $100,000. JFK stocked up on Cuban cigars hours before signing embargo. Hypocrisy. 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 Polar ice caps melting less than thought. Himalaya's nearby peaks lost no ice in past 10 years. Scientists are stunned that their own lies didn't come true. Study says conservative movies beat liberal movies at the box office. No kidding. Lawmakers protest removal of God reference from Air Force patch. Yep, that's what you get under a Leninist. The feds are now warning that you shouldn't eat bread. They're attacking bread. Too much salt in bread now. The staff of life is now their business. Father uses pocket knife to defeat mountain lion attacking son. I don't think he was a member of the ACLU. What else? Here's what else is in the news on the Savage Nation today. Lawmakers representing New York renew calls for a parade for Iraq veterans down the Canyon of Heroes after the city played host to an elaborate bash for the Super Bowl champion New York Giants. Good luck with Mayor Noberg. Mom charged after boy points gun at police. Harvard urges U.S. Marshals to evict Cameroon from embassy in Washington. Well, you get the picture. You'll hear all about it. All about it, including what's going on in Syria, right here on the Savage Nation.
What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. Well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes. What we have been able to do is move in the right direction. And what I'm just going to keep on doing is plodding away, very persistent. And you know what? One of the things about being president is you get better as time goes on.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com.
Savage.
Aside all threats from the Muslim Brotherhood and from the meddler in the White House, we're putting aside the thuggery of the unions, George Soros' megalomania and desire to take over the world. We're putting aside all the temporary problems of the world, and I'm going to answer your questions. Are they sexual in nature, financial, personal? Is it a problem with your boss? Is it with your husband? This is Mike Savage, Life Coach. Wisconsin, Shannon, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I need help with the fact that I'm a hardcore Democrat. My husband is a hardcore Republican.
So what's the problem?
Well, every time there's something going on in our state or federal, like right now the situation in Wisconsin, it sparks huge arguments between the two of us.
So do what women have done for centuries, withhold sex.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Why?
We have a six-month-old baby, so he doesn't have them very often anyways.
Well, that's what babies are for, aren't they? To keep the husband away.
It's the best birth control ever, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons women used to have babies every year or so was to make sure the husband left them alone. Well, I don't know what the problem is. You're not going to change his mind. He's not going to change yours. You're a communist and he's a Republican. What are you going to do? Well, I mean, is there any way for him to reach you with any reason? If, in other words, if your state is broke and bankrupt and the governor's asking teachers to pay a small amount towards their own pension and their own health care, does that not make sense to you? Where should the money come from?
From other...
Hello? Where should the money come from?
There's other ways to cut spending.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean there are other ways to cut spending? Why is it that people who work for a private company contribute to their own pensions and their own health care, but government workers should not? Is that fair? You're a Democrat. You're a fair-minded Democrat. Why should state workers be exempt from sharing the burden of supporting themselves?
Teachers don't make very much for wages.
A very good point, but neither do people in the private sector today. At least they have a job in teaching. They have a job that's secure. That's better than a lot of people who don't have any job at all.
Understandable.
You see, Shannon, things have changed. The world is not what it was when your parents were alive. Thank you for the call. Oh, does that husband have trouble? I see there's no way to reason with people when they met. Salt Lake City, Ryan, what's your question for Dr. Savage?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm 33 years old.
I have a bachelor's degree, but I'm thinking about going back to get my MBA. I just don't know if it's going to pay off in the long run. If I spend the $50,000 to get the MBA, is it going to pay off for me later on?
My suggestion is forget the MBA, spend $400 on a life coach degree, and become a life coach. You'll make more money faster.
That could be true.
I hear people are doing it. They're actually paying some people money to get some kind of, like, experience in being a life coach. How the heck can you become a life coach if you haven't lived?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are they going to advise people of if they haven't gone through it themselves? Now, as far as an MBA goes, I don't know. There was a time when it was a union card to a job in a corporation. Do MBAs really teach you today what you need to know in this economy? I can't answer that question. Do you have a family business, perhaps, that you're thinking of taking over? Or you got to create your own business?
Well, as of right now, I'm already employed, and it's always kind of been a dream of mine to be an entrepreneur and maybe start a business. But
Then why do you need an MBA? An MBA requires a good idea, some money, and the ability to go ahead and do it. You don't need an MBA for that. I mean, you need to know the basic principles of a business, marketing, etc. You need to know how to do that, but I don't know that you don't need a degree for that today. You could go on the internet right now and you could run a search that says what do I need to know to run a small business? Give me 10 steps. You could probably find it in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's true. But I mean, if that doesn't work out, if I need to, you know, lean back on a larger corporation, will it give me a head?
All right. That's another point. In other words, if you're looking to tomorrow in a more competitive marketplace, the MBA certainly would distinguish you from an applicant with an ordinary bachelor's degree in that regard. Yes, I'm always for that higher degree if it's from a decent university, and that's what you want. If, on the other hand, you're looking really to be an entrepreneur, you've got to think about what your best ideas might be. You know, the old statement, build a better mousetrap and people will be the door, a path to your doorstep. It's still true, by the way. It is still true. In fact, even in a down economy, people are still spending money, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's not like suddenly no one's buying anymore. They're not trading like oyster shells for their dinner. They're spending money. So if you put out a better product in a restaurant, people are going to go to it at a good price. Or whatever I don't know what your ideas are. You have to start thinking about your ideas rather than the degree. I'd put my ideas ahead of my degrees. Then I'd worry about it. You could hire an MBA to be your partner. Hire an MBA who killed himself for 3 years and make him the CFO and give him a piece of the business. Let him figure out all the angles of the business if you have a good idea. And you could you could sidestep having to go to school.
All right.
I know some of the people I know who are the most successful, whether they be in the media or in business, never even went to college, by the way. And they're multimillionaires because they had a good idea and they were willing to invest their own time and energy and build that business. And it could still be done. As I say, even in a down economy, there are products that have not yet been invented that people who are looking for a way out of a down economy would if I was hungry for money right now, I could come up with 5 ideas to get people to follow me right now and to give them the hope that they might find a way out of the morass they're in. I wouldn't do it because I don't want to exploit anybody. But there are ways that you can come up with ideas every day of the week, Ryan. Good economy, bad economy, it doesn't matter.
All right, thank you.
Anyway, so the bottom line of my answer to you is this. If you're thinking of security and you want to go in a big corporation, yes, go for the MBA. If, on the other hand, you have a better mousetrap that you want to put out in market right now, go to work with an MBA. Make him your CFO. Give him a piece of the business. If he thinks it's good, give him a percentage and let him go out and raise the money and go sell it. Thanks for the call. I'd like a sex question right now. Oh, here we got one here. Alabama. Elaine, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. My husband has not made or shown any interest in being intimate with me in 4 years or longer. And every time I pinpoint it and sit him down and question him about it, he will start cursing me and just jump up and leave the room. Mm. And so I was wondering what your...
How many years have you been together?
31.
Well, look, I don't want to make any jokes about it, but, you know, the romantic phase ended a while ago, correct?
Well, you with me it was forced, but...
Wait, hold on. With you, what was forced?
Well, it was forced to end with me because he's not interested. And I'm not about...
Well, hold on. So what is the basis of your relationship if it's not sexual? What keeps you together at all? You have something in common. There must be some reason. Is there a companionship element to the relationship at this point or not?
We're good friends.
Are you good friends? Do you fight all the time, or do you actually enjoy your company with him other than the sexual loss?
We enjoy each other's company other than that.
Well, let me tell you something. Elaine, you know, there's a little wisdom in what I'm going to tell you. You ask anyone going back any period of time, and they'll tell you that any long-term relationship primarily has to be based upon companionship. If you've got that, you've got 95% of the package, Elaine. A lot of people have sexuality. They have no relationship, though. They have no companionship and no care for each other. So sometimes you have to take what you have. I know the other side of you is dying. That's another story. I can't answer that one because I don't know what the dynamics are between you and your husband.
Your opinion, because I sure don't.
But what I'm going to say to you is, without being a wise guy, is if you have kindness between each other and you enjoy each other's company, instead of approaching him with, why aren't you making love to me? Why are you rejecting my advances? Why don't you try to emphasize with him how much you enjoy being with him and put that aside for a while? Don't even think about it. Try to put it aside because he'll pick up the vibes that you're not approaching him to go to bed with him. You're approaching him because you like being with him, and maybe that will come back again. You know what I'm saying?
Savage.
You know, the Arab winter is unfortunately meeting the worst expectations of intelligent people around the world, who could all see that the so-called revolutions were nothing but an excuse to impose Sharia law. Joining us now is reporter Frank Romano, who is speaking with us from Tunisia, where the Arab winter started. Frank, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you today.
Frank, remind the audience what happened in Tunisia that started the Arab winter.
Well, way back, students... fruit salesman who sells fruit in the street was being harassed by government officials. They took his scale away. He couldn't weigh the fruit he was selling in the street, and other administrative hassles. He got so frustrated, he went in front of one of the administrative offices in his village and set himself on fire. And that triggered a sort of a major national disgust about the conditions here under the dictator Ben Ali. And as you know, Ben Ali was forced to leave after a very intense period of protest and revolution, which spread immediately to Libya, to Egypt, and we see also in other Middle Eastern countries. Or Middle Eastern countries, because this is not the Middle East, this is Northern Africa, other than Egypt, Syria, another country, and Yemen, and so forth. It all triggered from that one event, and then it just went forward into a major Arab Spring movement all over North Africa and the Middle East.
What's happening in Tunisia right now? Didn't they just have elections?
Yes, and there's major concern at the beginning worldwide that because the Islamists have won the election. And an Islamist is a member of the Islamic religion who was voted not as a politician as we know, coming from the Democratic Republican Party or from Europe, whether it be the right, the left, or the right. It's actually a party sponsored by Islamic groups, which are Islamists. They're more orthodox Muslims that are in power now.
Well, so what are the Islamists doing now that they've won power?
And that's a good question, Michael, because the fear is, since they promised not to change the system that was set up before, other than the dictatorship. What I mean by the system that was set up before is a very liberal system here in Tunisia, where, as I saw today in the streets, and I've been here about a week now, you see women in all the professions, and they're wearing the hijab, which is a headscarf, But they're here present in all, and they were very present in the revolution. In fact, they were on the front lines of the sometimes violent protest movement. And the fear is, Michael, that little bit by bit, as the Islamists become entrenched in power here, will take more and more of their rights away, as in some very orthodox Muslim countries where women don't have many rights and normally are not working in the profession.
Do you see the same thing happening around the Middle East as I do?
As far as the revolution, Michael, every country is different. But it's true, the evolution in other countries where they've had elections, for instance, they say in Egypt, in May, for instance, where they'll have more finalized elections, that if any indications continue that way, there'll be also an Islamist party that will win, or a couple of Islamist parties that will win in Egypt as well. So yes, the revolution, once it's the dictator leaves or whatever other circumstances there are, that ends the revolution, and as they say, power to the people, then the elections take place. It is true, the Islamist party tend to succeed in the elections. In other words, a lot of the people that participated in the revolution are not necessarily winning the elections. And that gives rise to concern that we talked about before. However, what I see in Tunisia is that the Islamists are carrying out their promises. They haven't changed anything, it seems, with respect to, anyway, equal rights for all, including women. So it looks like they're carrying out their campaign promises to, elected, not to impose a severe Islamic doctrine as other countries have, such as the Taliban in Afghanistan, etc.
What's your reaction to what's going on with Iran right now? Do you think that war is inevitable? I hope not.
You know, I think there's a lot of talking going around the world about it, and I think it's taking up a lot of journalist attention, a lot of TV coverage. I'm not saying it's much ado about nothing, but you know, Michael, I don't really believe seriously that there's an impending conflict, military conflict with Iran as well, because so many things can be successfully accomplished through boycott. And also to mention that even though you hear reports about the evolution of their potential nuclear power, apparently they are saying that they're using nuclear energy for energy purposes and not as an arm. That remains to be seen. I think they're still far away from being a true world threat, just like Iraq wasn't the threat that we thought they were. In any case, I'm not sure. I think it might be much ado about nothing at this point. It's lots of politics. We'll see what happens. But I don't believe they're a direct threat right now. And we don't need to use Iran as a pretext to rattle the sabers and to mobilize the world, to distract the world, which war often does, from other major problems, which sometimes I think is an objective of targeting a country like Iran. And it's not always for valid purposes. As a real valid threat, that remains to be seen. That's my answer to the question, Michael. That's what I really feel.
Frank Romano, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you again, and I'm here in Tunisia talking to revolutionaries and trying to work my way back to Palestine, according to the book that you interviewed me on, Love and Terror in the Middle East, and so I'm sort of living what is chronicled in that book that you interviewed me on a while back.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
What is intelligence? It's a great question. It's been defined and redefined and redefined and defined and redefined, and it's An interesting question. Mark in Akron, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
I was wondering, Dr. Savage, if you could give us a definition for the layman of what intelligence is and how that relates to intelligence and versus knowledge.
It's a great question. I do not have the answer. All I can do is lead the discussion, Mark. Because when I was a kid, I was led to believe those who got better grades were more intelligent than I. It turned out they weren't. I was led to believe that those who did good on tests were intelligent. It was not necessarily true. I was led to believe that those who could memorize large books were intelligent. It's not necessarily true. I, for one, was not a good memorizer. I was not even a good student. I'm in very good company, though. I mean, there are many other people who've achieved a lot of great things in life, actually, or significant things in life, who are not very good students. So it leads us back to the question, really, of what is intelligence, Mark? How do you gauge intelligence in others?
Their ability to communicate is important to me. Their ability to formulate their thoughts and ideas. Not necessarily their knowledge of a subject, but their ability to think things through and come to what seem like logical conclusions.
All right, so you're saying that you admire reason in a person. And, you know, reason is a diminishing quantity in our society. We have feelings and we have thoughts and we have ideas. We have very little reason, particularly in the media. When have you last heard anyone in the media say, "Let us reason together"?
Practically never.
Practically never. They give you pre-digested chunks of ideas, and you're supposed to react to it and agree with them or not agree with them. I try it some, like I said, let us reason together on the staphylococcus infection. I don't hear anyone at the CDC saying, "Let's reason together." Have you?
No, I haven't.
No.
It's like
Watson's controversial statement about Africans. You could get the Mexican people saying, "How dare you even raise the question of immigrants bringing in staphylococcus? That even if it's true, we don't want to hear it, and it should not be allowed to be discussed." Well, you can damn yourself if someone would say that to me. I mean, we may as well dig our own graves and throw ourselves in them if we reach the point where we have every pressure group in the world determining what we can and cannot think. We're finished as a society. Now, let's get back, though, to the question that doesn't agitate me, which is what is intelligence? And I do want to talk about it. So as I said to you, I was not a good test taker. I always struggled in school. I was always sitting at a desk dreaming, and my mind was always somewhere else. I'm easily distracted. Well, I don't know. My mind was elsewhere. Let's put it to you that way. I don't know where. Personal problems on idea. I don't know where they were. I wasn't devising the theory of evolution, but my mind would wander. So I didn't have the ability to sit and memorize. And a lot of the kids who could became doctors or lawyers. I would say some rather prosaic doctors and lawyers. I don't know of any who became particularly brilliant physicians or scientists. Some may have. And I don't know any who have become great legal theorists. They've become lawyers. Good. I couldn't be a lawyer because I couldn't memorize all those books. People said to me, "Be a lawyer. I told you this before. When I grew up, all the families were man and woman, you know, married and together. And everyone else's mother and father was like your surrogate mother and father as well. You could run to them off that street in the Bronx and go to their apartment if you were hungry or if you were cut or if you needed somebody to console you for something. His mother was as good as your mother, and she would be your mother, for it was beautiful. It was a great, great way. But the fathers were also everyone's father in those neighborhoods in those days. Kids were not alone. They were never alone. There was always someone watching those kids. Believe me, nobody had a chance to go and grab the child inappropriately. They would have taken that guy and thrown him off a roof. They wouldn't have called the ACLU. The men would have grabbed anyone like a pervert in that neighbor. They would have taken him up to the sixth floor and thrown him off the roof. I can guarantee you they would have done that. And the pervs knew that, and they stayed away from those neighborhoods. But to get back to the other point I was going to make. So as we got older, the guys would sit and talk with, I remember one in particular, one guy's father. I told you, I mentioned him before. I won't mention his name. I hope he's still living. He must be 90 by now. But he was sort of the man's man of the men. He was different than all the other men. All the other men were either small shopkeepers like that. He was a club owner when it was unheard of for a man in that milieu to be a club owner. And a very, very strong, it was like a fighter, street fighter, club owner kind of guy. And he was the kind of guy that kids would gravitate to because he was just that kind of guy. You know, I don't have to describe in words what men know what I'm talking about. He was a manly guy who boys looked up to. Let's put it to you that way. They knew he was the toughest man in the block. He didn't have to prove it either. He didn't beat up anyone's father. Everyone just knew it by looking at him. So anyway, as the talk would turn in those neighborhood, in that neighborhood, Johnny, what do you want to be? Billy, what do you want to be? Sam, what do you want to be? He came to me, said, you know, Michael, you want to be a lawyer, they tell me. I said, why? I didn't even know what a lawyer was. They said, because you talk quickly and you can think quickly. I said, oh, great. Well, what's a lawyer do? They said, well, you see all those books? You gotta go, and the next time you're in a lawyer's, I didn't even know what a lawyer was. You have to read all those books and memorize all. And as I got older, I said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to remember what's in books and then have to use that in a conversation. So I knew I couldn't be a good lawyer because that's not how my mind worked. It doesn't mean lawyers aren't intelligent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there are different kinds of intelligence is what I'm getting to. And then no, there's a certain development in my acceptance of intelligence. I come from a very parochial world of New York City. People in New York City are very prejudiced and very parochial in their attitudes about intelligence and class and coolness. They all think they're the smartest people on earth because they aren't, generally. You know, they think that their street is the best, their block is the best, that this is the best. But all the years I've been gone from New York, it took me a long while to adjust to certain understandings. I came to learn in traveling, for example, in the Fiji Islands and sitting many, many hours with black men drinking kava kava, that there's a different realm of intelligence. And I spent many a night sitting and drinking kava kava with black women in straw huts, and I came to understand that there's another dimension of intelligence, that it's all not based upon quickness of mind, quickness of thought, ability to answer questions and answer tests. So you got to understand my definition of intelligence is much different than you may think. I'm highly educated. I have a bachelor's degree, two master's degrees that are real, including one published as a book, one dissertation published as a book, and the other one published as a book. Make no mistake about it, I have the real McCoy in education. Really good stuff. But I don't gauge other people solely by their education. I have met people without an education who were extremely intelligent. They didn't have the opportunity. They didn't have the father. They didn't have the mother. They didn't have the drive. They didn't have the psychological motivation. Whatever it was, it doesn't mean they have a low IQ. I've met criminals without formal education who are super high IQ people. You've met criminals who are have high IQs, high intelligence quotients, but there's something warped in them which gives them the psychological desire to steal or to hurt people along with their intelligence. So, you know, there's something's missing there. Something broke along the way, and there's no defining, you know, how that happened or why. And then when I got to California in the 70s, I also had a wise guy attitude that people were stupid here because they talked slower. And then the more time I spent out here in California, the more I realized that some people can talk slow, but they actually are very intelligent. It took me a long time to slow my mind down, to listen to the things people were saying, to understand that some of the things they were saying were quite wise or intelligent. Now, conversely, you can also dismiss fast-talking New Yorkers such as me as facile or glib or unintelligent. And some of you like to do that because you are incapable of actually hearing what I have to say. So what is intelligence? I don't know. Let's go back again. What is intelligence? Do you measure it only by the number of Nobel Prizes? Well, that's one way to measure it up until about 1958. But when you look at who's been given Nobel Prizes since, like Al Gore with an invented theory that's not even based upon science, but it's a political theory, or some of the other questionable Nobel Prizes, such as those given to Yasser Arafat, who specialized in murdering innocent people, I wouldn't use the number of Nobel Prizes as a gauge of IQ anymore. So where do we turn, okay? Let's take kids. Some kids are very good at book learning. God bless them, and we need them. But we don't know how high their IQ really is. Another kid might be horrible at memorizing and writing, but he's a heck of a painter. Or what about the child who's has a wonderful musical IQ, like through the roof musical IQ, but like really average or below average when it comes to academics and other subjects? So what is his intelligence? So therefore, I think you have to answer the question, and you have to ask the question a different way, and you have to answer the question in a different way. I don't believe there's one human cultural standard for IQ, number one. Otherwise, we would all be taking one standardized IQ test. On the other hand, you can't throw out all testing, as some of the socialists amongst us have tried to do, and say testing is inherently racist or biased. That's rubbish. There have to be minimal standards for intelligence in order for children to graduate from classes. I'm a former teacher, and believe me, although some kids were not very good at test-taking, you can tell pretty much they were intelligent anyway. And there are kids who are not good at tests, and they're stupid, okay? So to get back to the bigger question of what is intelligence, I can't give you the answer. I can only lead the discussion. And I think that's a great answer. That's all I can do for you. And it goes back to the black guy who called earlier who got mad at me. I didn't make those statements about Africa. He did. He got mad at me for even repeating what the man said. When I said, at least we can discuss it, don't tell me it's forbidden to discuss Dr. Watson's pearls of wisdom, he said other things that were offensive to groups. He offended Jews. He offended homosexuals. He offended those with erectile dysfunction. He offended girly men. He offended, what's that thing that children get that they call now? I don't even know what it's called.
Savage.